This is a CBC podcast.
CBC podcasts are supported by HP Print Studio. Express your brand with HP Print Studio. Find free, customized templates to build your business identity, like letterhead, business cards, and shipping labels. Start the journey at www.hp.ca/print.
Hello, and welcome to the Vinyl Cafe podcast. We publish a new podcast every weekend. You can download the latest or subscribe to the Vinyl Cafe podcast at cbc.ca/podcasting. This week, Sam Goes Green.
The first Dave heard of it, it was back in the fall. He heard it from his friend Dennis, who was in town working on a Patsy Cline project. Some guy was recording an album of Patsy Cline covers, note for note instrumentals, no vocals. Fellow had hired Dennis to play bass, and they were working nights to save money, which meant Dennis had the afternoons to kill, and he started dropping in. By the end of the week, Dennis, who has an eye for a deal and not a lot of restraint once he spotted one, had bought a Sun recording by Johnny Cash called The Songs That Made Him Famous, and a Best of Otis Redding and the Red Beatles and Marvin Gaye's What's Going On and the Many Moods of Charlie Louvin. On Friday, he was working his way through the cheap bin at the back of the store, Vinyl's Last Stop, when he whooped. Dave looked up from behind the counter. Dennis was holding an album in the air and swaying back and forth. Merle Haggard's Breakthrough Record, said Dennis. That shouldn't have been in there, said Dave, when Dennis brought it to the cash. But he didn't really mind. It was nice having Dennis around. And that's when he heard, that Friday, from Dennis. Jake's going out again, said Dennis. He's rounding everyone up. You're kidding, said Dave. He called last night, said Dennis. Wanted your number. Jake James, the front man for Jake and the Apostles. David met him the afternoon the Apostles had opened for Jefferson Airplane in Nathan Phillips Square. I always thought he was going to be the next big thing, said Dave. Everybody did, said Dennis. Turned out Jake had stage fright. Turned out every time Jake got a break, something would happen. He'd blow his voice or something. He's going to call, said Dennis. He said, you promised. It took a week, maybe two. Jake didn't call. He dropped by. When he walked into the store, Dave held his hands up in the air. He didn't make Jake ask. Jake walked through the front door. Dave held his hands up and said, I'm in. It's only a week, said Jake. You could bring Morley. And that's why Stephanie came home for spring break this year. Dave was road managing Jake James's week-long comeback attempt. Morley was along for support, selling product and keeping things even. And Stephanie was at home, looking after Sam. He's not old enough to stay alone, said Dave. We'll pay you. Stephanie didn't have any plans anyway. It worked out well for everyone. Night before they left, Dave and Morley finished Sam's room. They'd been at it for a couple of weeks, upgrading it from a little boy's room. New bed, new desk, new rug, and the final step, new paint. Moonraker. Shade of yellow between springtime and lantern light. Strangely, the yellow paint was making Morley blue. You don't understand, she said one night. Her hair was covered by a red bandana. She had a paintbrush in one hand and a tiny piece of blue plastic toy in the other. You don't understand, she said, holding out the plastic piece. All this is over, over forever. I don't even know what that is, said Dave. Morley sighed and dropped the little piece of plastic into a set of rolling drawers. It's a tail stabilizer for a Sigma 6 Dragon Hawk, she said. The night before they left, Morley took Sam out to buy sheets for his new bed. He chose flannel Ninja Turtle sheets. Morley was beaming when she got home. Just when you've given up hope, she said. Did he buy them in earnest or irony, asked Dave. Don't want to know, said Morley. They left the next morning. We'll be back Sunday, said Dave. We'll call every night, 6 o'clock. Fun, 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 said Sam, under his breath, as he and his sister watched their parents pull out of the driveway. Given their past experiences under similar circumstances, this was a stunning flash of optimism. When Stephanie was 13 and babysitting her little brother for the first time, she had made Sam, who was about 7 at the time, spend the entire afternoon cleaning his bedroom. At 16, she'd invited 4 girlfriends over, and Sam had been sent to his room with a video, a family-sized bag of chips, and a solemn promise not to come out for the entire evening. Something about their relationship had changed. It was nothing either of them had done. It was just the relentless tides of breakfasts and dinners, of socks and underwear, time tumbling them the way the ocean tumbles glass, smoothing away the sharp edges, rolling the hard green of impatience into the emerald sea softness of love. It was just the work of the ocean and the laws of family asserting themselves. Since she's been away at school, Stephanie's appetite for bugging her brother had dissolved. We'll go out for dinner, she said. There's a place I want to show you. It was the way she said we that Sam noticed. I'm going to meet Becky, she said. She needs to buy a dress. I'll call you later. We can meet. There, she did it again. She gave Sam her cell phone number, but nothing else. No instructions, nothing. He didn't even notice her going out. He liked this. This was cool. He felt growing up. They should have sent Stephanie to university years ago. Sam spent that Saturday morning amusing himself and annoying Arthur the dog with his Nerf gun. Peter Moore came over in the afternoon with his Nintendo Wii. Murphy came over too. They played for 6 hours. Dave phoned at 6 and said, the boys can stay for dinner. You could order pizza. Then Dave said, the healthiest choice is the one with the grilled vegetables and no cheese. Sam said, we'll get that one for sure. Would you mind if we had it with the steamed broccoli? Stephanie called. Sam said, I'm going to stay here. After Peter and Murphy left, Sam stayed up and watched his secret copy of Porky's. Twice. Stephanie didn't seem to care when he went to bed or whether he took a bath or what he ate. He slept until noon on Saturday, later on Sunday. On Monday at the end of library, Mrs. Atkinson asked Sam to stay behind. Are you feeling okay, she said. What? Asked Sam. He happened to be feeling on top of the world. You don't look well, said Mrs. Atkinson. I thought I should ask. Sam shook her off. Sam felt fine. As he bounced down the hall, he was thinking, Mrs. Atkinson is weird. Then it happened again, after lunch. In between period 4 and 5, Mr. O'Neill stopped him in the hall and asked him the same thing. Are you feeling okay? You look a little sallow. I'm fine, said Sam. He didn't say anything about Mrs. Atkinson, but it was weird, twice in a day. It made him wonder. He went to the boys' room and peered at himself in the mirror. He looked fine. But after school, they were playing ball hockey in Peter's driveway, and Peter said, what's the matter with you? And Sam said, what do you mean? Peter said, you look green. Sam asked Stephanie that night, do I look okay? Your jeans are too baggy, said Stephanie. You should get a job and get decent jeans. When I was your age, I was buying my own jeans. Jeans are supposed to be baggy, said Sam, looking at his legs dubiously. Not this year, said Stephanie. When his parents called, Sam wanted to tell them what Mrs. Atkinson had said about him looking bad, But he didn't want to worry them, especially his father, who has a tendency to overreact. "Before you go to bed," said Dave, "check the oven and make sure it's off. Also, the back door. Make sure the back door's locked and don't light any candles." "You're not lighting candles, are you?" "No," said Sam, "I'm not lighting candles." "What about your sister?" The next morning, they had gym, first period. Basketball, the skins versus the shirts. Sam was a skin. After 5 minutes, Mr. Lovell pulled him onto the sidelines. "You look a little green," said Mr. Lovell. "You better sit out." Sam went into the boys' room and looked in the mirror again. It wasn't just his face. It was his whole chest. He spun around and peered over his shoulder at his back, and he felt a rush of anxiety. Something was wrong. It was like he had a tan, but weird. He changed mirrors, and it was the same. It was like he had a bruise all over his body, but different. It was hard to tell, but it made him scared. Maybe he wasn't feeling so good. When gym was over, he tried to brush it off. "It's just the color of my skin," he said. "You shouldn't judge someone by the color of their skin." But the truth was, he was feeling worried. When his parents phoned at supper, Dave said, "Before we left, I meant to check the smoke alarm and I forgot. Will you check the smoke alarm? There should be a little light flashing every 10 seconds. If it's not flashing every 10 seconds, call us on Mummy's cell." "I'm fine," said Sam. Obviously, he wasn't fine. "You do look a little green," said Stephanie later that night. "Do you feel okay?" The truth was, he didn't feel okay. The truth was, he was feeling tired and he was getting a headache. "I'm fine," he said. But he didn't sound convinced, and he headed for his room. Stephanie came upstairs 10 minutes later and said, "People turn orange from eating too many carrots." Sam was lying on his bed. He had the covers up to his chin. "I'm not turning orange," he said. "I'm turning green." Stephanie said, "Because maybe you've eaten too much green stuff." "But I haven't had a single vegetable since Mom and Dad left," said Sam. Stephanie came back 10 minutes later with a plate of beets, an apple, and a cut-up red pepper. Sam said, "You want to turn me red?" Stephanie said, "Red and green are complementary colors. I'm trying to balance you." "I feel sick," said Sam. The next morning, he was definitely worse. He came downstairs and there was an undeniable moldy pallor to his skin. His whole complexion was vaguely off. "I'm going to phone Dr. Keene," said Stephanie. "You should stay in bed." Stephanie's concern scared him. Stephanie never paid him this much attention. She wasn't just paying him attention, she was being kind and concerned. It could only mean one thing. He was dying. "I'm okay," he said. He was trying to convince himself. He went back upstairs and he got into his pajamas. He read for a while, but he was feeling worse and worse. And it was hot under the covers, and he began to sweat. And he rubbed the perspiration off his forehead onto his pajama sleeve, and he froze. There was a bright green smear on his shirt sleeve. His sweat was the color of lime Kool-Aid. That could only mean one thing. Whatever he had was coming from inside of him. Suddenly, it was obvious. He had been colonized by some weird green thing. A space creature, possibly. Or some sort of swamp algae. Maybe his insides were going moldy like swamp water. or a piece of cheese that had been left in the fridge too long. It really didn't matter what it was, because it was pretty obvious that whatever it was, it wanted out. His chest could erupt at any moment. Murphy came over after school. Sam said, "I think I have an alien." Murphy nodded earnestly. Then he took off his glasses and pulled out his shirt, and he polished his glasses on his shirt tail, which is what Murphy does when he's thinking very hard. He polished his glasses and then he put them back on, and he bent over Sam, who was lying on his bed despondently, and he peered at Sam, coming closer and closer until their faces were less than 6 inches apart. And Sam was getting uncomfortable. Sam turned his head and said, "What are you doing?" And Murphy reached out and took Sam's chin and twisted it so they were face to face again. And he said, "Breathe." And Sam said, "Why?" And Murphy said, "I want one too." At 5 o'clock, Stephanie took Sam to see Dr. Keene. On the way there, Sam was thinking Dr. Keene would tell him there was nothing to worry about. Sam thought Dr. Keene would say that boys his age turn green all the time. It's a perfectly normal thing, and it would go away in a couple of days. But that's not what happened. Dr. Keene took one look at Sam and frowned. Dr. Keene agreed that Sam did not look well at all. Dr. Keene listened to Sam's heart and looked in Sam's ears and took Sam's temperature. And then Dr. Keene shook his head and said he was flummoxed. "We'll do some tests," said Dr. Keene. Sam said, "Do you think maybe I have an alien?" Dr. Keene said, "I don't know what you have. I'm a little perplexed." Dr. Keene was muttering to himself as he wrote notes in a file. "If you were blue, it'd be a different matter. If you were blue, I'd be thinking about cyanosis and any number of things that involve your heart and lungs. And if you were yellow, well, it could be primary biliary cirrhosis, Wilson's disease, yellow fever, liver, or even pancreatic cancer, jaundice, hyperbilirubinemia, anemia, hepatitis A, B, C, D, E, or Y, I think. Or, of course, gallstones." "Hyperbile what?" said Sam, nervously. Dr. Keene looked up at him. "What? Oh, I forgot you were still here. Hyperbilirubinemia, but you're not yellow." He looked back at the file and muttered, "You're not blue either." "No," said Sam, "I'm green." "I'm going to take some blood," said Dr. Keene. Sam looked away as Dr. Keene got ready to draw the blood. "Deep breath," said Dr. Keene. Then he said, "All finished." Sam said, "Well?" Dr. Keene said, "Well, what?" Sam said, "What color is it?" On the way home, Dr. Keene's list of diseases echoed in Sam's ears. He couldn't remember all their names, just hyperbilirubinemia. And that there were a lot more, blue ones and yellow ones. When he got home, he crawled morosely back into bed. Pretty soon, he was crying. He wanted his mother and father. Why were they away when he needed them? Probably he'd be dead when they came home. If his mother was there, she would sit beside him on the bed and tell him not to worry. If his father was there, he would panic. Sam got out of bed and began to pace. He could figure this out. Maybe Stephanie was right. If carrots made you orange, it made sense that green stuff made you green. He had to avoid anything green. He went over to his desk and he started making a list. Beans, broccoli, Brussels sprouts. There was a lot of green stuff when you thought about it. Lettuce, spinach, peas. Though it had never occurred to him just how much. He kept adding to his list. No wonder he was turning green. Cabbage, kiwi, and cucumbers. He stared at the paper for a moment without writing anything. Then he added collard greens, bok choy, and mint chocolate chip ice cream. He was still at it when Murphy called. Sam said, "The doctor did a blood test." Murphy said, "What color was it?" Sam told him about Dr. Keene's list. Murphy said, "I better come over." Murphy was standing at the foot of his bed, wiping his glasses. Murphy said, "It's worse than we thought. All those blue and yellow diseases." Sam said, "I don't have them." Murphy shook his head. "It's possible you have all of them." Exactly. When you mix blue and yellow together, what do you get? It was the worst night in Sam's life. A sense of doom settled on him. Murphy was right. The doctor wouldn't have taken blood if he didn't think something horrible was happening. At 9 o'clock that night, the phone rang. Sam prayed it was his mother. They had decided not to tell their parents anything until they got the test results. They didn't want to ruin their trip. But if it was his mother, he was going to tell her right now. It wasn't his mother, of course. And the wheels of the night ground on. Sam lying in bed, working through all of the possibilities. What if it wasn't fatal? What if it was worse than that? How green could he turn without dying? He fell into a fitful sleep around midnight, but he didn't sleep well. He kept waking up. In the morning, Murphy called, all excited. "You don't have to worry. It's okay. You're not the only one. I just heard that the Prime Minister's going green." "And he wants other people to turn green too." Sam clung to that for an hour. Maybe he was the first. Maybe he'd go down in history as a trailblazer. Maybe in 200 years he'd be a folk hero, just like Jackie Robinson. Maybe he'd be the first green boy to go to university. The first green Olympian. Like that. Dr. Keene called in the afternoon and said the test results were normal. But he wasn't. He was still green. "I'm not sure what to think," said Dr. Keene. "If it continues for a few more days, you should come back in." It was obvious Dr. Keene didn't have a clue what was going on. Sam was certain about one thing. When his mom and dad called at supper, he was going to tell them. His mother, that is. But it was his father who called. Sam said, "Can I speak to Mom?" Dave said, "Mom's right here. There's just a couple of things I want to go over first." "I want to speak to Mom," said Sam. "Tonight's garbage night," said Dave. "I want you to empty the garbage cans in the upstairs and downstairs bathroom and take everything out before you go to bed. And make sure the lid is on tight so nothing can get in. Also make sure the milk is still good. If it's off, Stephanie should buy some new milk tomorrow." Sam said, "Please, can I speak to Mom?" Dave said, "One more thing. If you want to use your new sheets, make sure you wash them first." "What?" said Sam. "The Ninja Turtle sheets," said Dave. "Make sure you wash them before you use them, because if you don't..." Sam interrupted his father. He was talking on the portable phone. He was sitting in his bed. "If I don't wash them first," said Sam. He was looking down at the Ninja Turtle on the pillow, at the green Ninja Turtles on the sheets. "If I don't wash them," said Sam, "I'll turn green, right?" "Right," said Dave. "Now, do you want to speak to Mom? She's right here." "No, it's okay," said Sam. "I'll talk to her tomorrow." Thank you.
That's Stuart McLean, and that's from the Vinyl Cafe. Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe will be heading out on tour this autumn. They'll be doing live Vinyl Cafe concerts in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, and the United States. They'll be making stops in Kelowna, Nanaimo, Duncan, Trail, Vernon, Prince George, Terrace, Kamloops, Abbotsford, Montreal, Kingston, Huntsville, North Bay, Sudbury, Chatham, Indianapolis, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and Seattle, Washington. You can log on to the Vinyl Cafe website for a complete list of shows. You can find the Vinyl Cafe on the web at vinylcafe.com.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.